Heartlandia. We have two incredible special guests today, and it's Walter Jaffe and Paul King of Whitebird. And I've been a fan of Whitebird since I moved here in 1988, and I wondered when Whitebird began. Were you in place when I moved here, or after?
No, we were living in New York.
Oh, you were, and when did you come to town?
Well, 1996, so 20 years ago this month.
20 years ago this month, so this is a historical...
It is, and it's
time.
The longest either of us have lived in one city, and it's the longest either of us have been in one house.
Is that right?
Yeah, we're settled in.
Oh, you are such an important part of the arts community here.
Thank
you.
Not
only as presenters that you have brought such important, interesting work, and to my mind, it seems that you've really inspired a lot of companies in the city. And I mean, I interviewed Sarah Slipper not too long ago, and obviously you were pivotal in her going to New York with her company and the beautiful work that she was able to achieve there. I mean, you're not resting on your laurels. You keep going.
We keep going. It's our 19th season coming up. We started as an experiment. We moved to Portland. First of all, we moved to Portland from New York, not knowing really anything about Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm. What drew you here in the first place?
We decided after 16, 17 years living in New York City, and we had totally different professions.
What were your professions prior?
Okay.
Here we go.
Here's the whole story. I have a PhD in German literature from Yale University, and I was in New Haven. And I couldn't get a teaching job, so I went to New York and looked for publishing jobs, and ultimately worked for a German publishing company who decided to open a New York office. And so I was working with this German office for 13 years.
Mm-hmm. Paul and I was a pastry chef.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
In New York and in France for 2 years.
Oh.
I studied there. I was many pounds ago.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, what restaurants did you work in?
I worked at a place called the Quilla Giraffe. It was a four-star restaurant in New York, and it was a great job because not only was it the most expensive restaurant in the United States, it was open Monday through Friday for dinner only.
Oh.
So I was like... great place, you know, to be. Is like the only restaurant job like that.
You must have seen some really good clothes.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of downstairs baking, but I, you know, it was a lot of celebrities and whatnot came in. And,
oh, fascinating.
And yeah, it was great. Lori and I went there to eat one time to celebrate a special occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun. It was this, back then, this was in the 80s, the mid, late 80s, it was $75 prefix or $100 prefix. And if you did the $100 prefix, you got the beggar's purses, which were crepes that had a little dollop of creme fraiche and then a dollop of caviar, and then they were tied with a little chai, like this little purse.
Oh,
so it's an oxymoron, the beggar's purse. And that was what your extra supplement, $25, got you, were these beggar's purses. And I used to make those.
Uh-huh.
And it was a dollop of caviar for the beggar's purse, a dollop for me. You know. But that was a little benefit of being in that position. Then I went to France for 2 years and studied and worked there and worked at Cordon Bleu. And I worked for a Michelin 3-star restaurant in the Champagne District.
Oh, well, I am fixated on that Netflix series, Chef's Table. Have you watched any of that?
I haven't looked at that.
Oh,
no.
It's so wonderful.
You've got to look at it, though.
It's great. It focuses on one chef, and they're chefs from all over the world, and they're the various things that they do and where they do them. And, oh, my goodness, it's so much fun, because as a creative artist, and I would bet that both of you, prior to being presenters and such movers and shakers in the dance world, that you're creative people, you know?
I think so. You know, when we were living in New York, we went to every theater. We had a subscription to every theater club in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the film festivals. We saw dance.
Mm-hmm. New York City Ballet.
We had New York City subscriptions in New York City Ballet from the beginning, and to Paul Taylor. And my family has been involved in theater for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Just aside... Bar, and maybe you're aware of this, but my cousin, actually my mother's and father's first cousin, is Libby Apple, who was the director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival for 12 years.
Oh, yeah.
And another interesting thing about theater is that our cousin who lives in New York, mm-hmm. her husband, so cousin by marriage, just won a Tony Award.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Now, who is that?
Reed Birney.
Oh, how exciting.
And the Humans. Yeah,
oh,
we just
talked. He had such a beautiful speech.
He did.
I loved
he
his
did.
Speech.
Yeah, we talked to him today.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Yeah, what a. Now, that's so interesting because another Portlander, Kurt Crowley, who is a music director and is now working on Hamilton, was also here for quite a while. So there's all sorts of interesting little Tony. Oh,
and
wonderful.
And
it's a good play, The Humans.
He's
yes,
married.
I've heard. It's
He's
absolutely
married
brilliant.
To Connie Schulman, Constance Schulman, who's in Orange is the New Black.
Yes.
And this summer, she's going to be performing with her daughter in The Rose Tattoo up in Williamstown.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And her daughter is the daughter in the play.
Yes, yeah. plays the daughter.
Well, that reminds me of my dad and me. And my dad, as an actor, he passed away 5 years ago. But we did a play where he actually stepped in for an actor who became ill and played my father. And that was, it's just so interesting.
So there has been a theater connection in my family for a while, and I actually dabble in theater. But the point is that when we were in New York, and Paul and I have been together since 1982, and just got married, by the way, in February.
Congratulations.
After 34 years.
34 years?
We ended a 34-year engagement, You gotta be sure.
I love that.
I was on the board of the Paul Taylor Dance Company. We decided to get out of New York City. We looked at a map, and decided on checking out places on both coasts. And Portland was not in the original mix. It's actually at the very end because two people, my brother and an old friend of Paul's, had just been to Portland, Oregon, and said, why don't you check out Portland, Oregon? So we decided to do that. We were actually on our way to Santa Rosa, California to do something in food. We came here in January of 1996, just before the floods. We fell in love with the city. It was like instant connection.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Do you think drew you to it?
Well, all these places we had gone to, Savannah and Charleston and Portland, Maine and Portsmouth, New Hampshire and Boulder, Colorado, San Luis Obispo, California and Santa Rosa, they were all much smaller, the South, beautiful and charming, but not the place for a gay couple to move to necessarily. And then New England is going to be too close to his family. And I don't know. But his close friend of mine and his brother had each been in Portland they were here for different things. One was here for a wedding, and my friend was here for business. But they each had said to us separately, when they learned that we were looking at different cities, that they had been to Portland, and if you're checking out cities, they were just there, and we should take a look at Portland. So we said, okay, we'll stop at Portland before we go to Santa Rosa, and we were leaving the blizzard of '96 in New York. We were one of the last flights out.
Oh my gosh.
It was like people were skiing down Madison Avenue. It was crazy. So we got here and just. We just fell in love with it. In the rain, we thought, well, if it's this beautiful now, it's going to be great in the summer. So,
you were right.
So we didn't even go to Santa Rosa.
Oh.
And we didn't bring our passports because we thought, well, let's go to Mexico. So we went to Hawaii.
So that was the beginning. And then we actually moved to Portland in June of 1996. Mm-hmm. And the connection is through the Paul Taylor Dance Company. The general manager, who was a friend of ours, was coming to Portland, and he said, I'm attending a conference. I said, great, okay, let's meet up at the conference. We knew nothing. So the conference is over at the Convention Center. We went over there. It's the Western Arts Alliance, which is an organization that is actually supports regional performing arts organizations within the Western states. Mm-hmm. And it's a booking conference, which means it brings together agents and presenters and company managers and so on to book in all fields. Mm-hmm. So we did that, and we got into the conference, and the operations manager, his name is John Tomlinson, said to us, well, why don't we bring or present Paul Taylor? Paul Taylor was in Portland, had been coming to Portland regularly, and then in recent years it stopped. There was actually no dance happening in Portland, unfortunately. And we had no idea what he was talking about. So we did some investigating and determined there was a really committed dance audience, but with no dance here except for the ballet. And so we said, okay, we'll try it.
There was the Portland State University had a four-year degree program, and they also had a 10-year presenting program where they presented six companies. And this woman, Nancy Metchek Martino, she married a gentleman named Martino, and she was the one who programmed it and kind of made it all work. But when ballot measure 5 was on the ballot and was passed, it was this rollback of taxes. It was a couple years before we got here. And it created a situation where all of the major institutions, including institutions of higher learning, had to make large cuts. Mm-hmm. And Portland State University realized that the amount they needed to cut was about the amount of money that was being put into the dance program, and they just lopped it off overnight. So all the teachers, the students, the presenting program, all gone. And there was a big hole, you know, really
so timely that you were able to come and fill it, and more than fill it, really. I mean,
well,
you
that's,
created
you know,
something.
Well, we built on that audience, right. Certainly.
It's a big experiment. We had no idea. We literally had no idea.
Oh, you must have. I mean, to see the work that you bring, to know personally from bringing our children all through their growing up to Whitebird, and to know, to have young people and everyone see the type of work that people are doing all over the world in the face of all these challenges we're having as a world.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so breathtaking and so inspiring. I hope and think you must feel really,
we
really
feel
amazing
really
about
good
it.
And actually that is sort of the payoff. Mm-hmm. You know, the impact of dance on everyone. And we're not just talking about people who buy tickets to the performers, but on the Portland community, the Portland region. Because just as important as presenting the work on stage is bringing these companies into Portland Public Schools,
right,
into the regional schools, into the colleges, bringing them to community centers. We work very closely with various community leaders, and this just seeing expressions on these people's faces. One of the best things is we have brought our companies to St. Mary's Home for Boys, which is on Beaverton.
I've done an outreach there with the Haven Project, and that was one of the most life-altering pieces of volunteerism I've done.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to put it.
Fantastic.
It's been life-altering, and it's been incredibly moving for the dance companies.
It is.
As well as for the students.
I think for the artists.
Yeah.
I know for me, when I feel riled up about a performance for whatever reason, and you know what we do has its reasons to make you a little nervous, and it just puts things in perspective right away. You see people in need, and you think, oh, right. This is the world.
Yeah.
This is where I fit in. It's so good. I'll never forget, actually, there was a company, an Israeli company you brought, that had that big blow-up thing that they had on stage with them.
Bodyland. Was this over at Lincoln Hall?
It was at the Schnitzer. Maybe it was Lincoln Hall.
With a big balloon?
With the big crazy guy like they have now at the car places. Yeah, it was the
first time I'd ever seen it last year. Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll never forget the girls. They were just, you know, it was it inspired us every day, because anytime you pass a car place and it had one of those books, that's bigger than just advertising. That's art, people. They do stuff. It was just so much
wonderful.
Fun.
Yes, we feel like we're the lucky ones, honestly, to be in this amazing community. We don't think that what we do here necessarily is possible in other cities, other places. It's because people give you a chance. They're willing to try, and they're willing to support. They're very loyal, you know. So it's because of that and their generosity that we're able to continue it. And we're doing it kind of stubbornly and selfishly in our own way, you know. It may not be the way the bean counters want to see us do it. You know, maybe bringing more commercial work so that it brings in more revenue, but that's not our vision.
Right.
It's not our vision, and the community part is as important to us as what's on stage. So it has to be the whole package for us. You
right.
know, it's we've commissioned 35 works in our 19 years. So
it's half, so at least
incredible.
Half of those at least half of those are Portland-based artists.
See, your commitment to local makers of art mm-hmm. is palpable. And as an artist, that is just so impressive. You nurture, you support, and inspire. I mean, those three things. What else do we need as artists, right?
Well, thank you. It's great to hear you say that. Say these things, and we hear it. But when I look out, I just see more need, you know. I just see
it is there.
More, so much more to do.
Right, and awesome, fantastic cross-collaboration.
Yes,
between,
yes.
I mean, this is an area that I really think about a lot, and because I'm a resident artist at mm-hmm. Artist Repertory Theater, and then I recently mm-hmm. work at the opera, and then I recently
right.
work, work all over the country doing all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... Oh, and I also did a collaboration with Oregon Ballet where I sang mm-hmm. on stage with live dance. And I
yes.
think there's such wonderful ways we can continue to collaborate as artists
yeah.
in all the various
genres. For us,
genres.
That is really exciting, and we've done that many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
Just to go back to the beginning, we actually, after Paul Taylor, we did present Paul Taylor
mm-hmm.
in October 97 at the Schnitzer. Then we did a New York-based company whom we'd never heard of, but
mm-hmm.
we knew it had a reputation, Stephen Petronio.
Oh, right.
And
this
that was
a,
actually
downtown.
In partnership yeah. with Cascade AIDS Project. That was the first time we worked with CAP.
It was, it was a benefit for them.
Oh.
We raised $5,000 for their Teen to Teen program. It was our second show. And Bima Restaurant,
uh-huh.
who was the first restaurant in the Pearl,
mm-hmm.
they said, we'll give you 200 dinners.
Oh.
You know, so for $50... You could go to the Newmark and see Steve Matronio, and then we all went to Bima and
uh-huh.
had dinner, and it was just great.
I think I saw Merce Cunningham.
And then we've done Merce
with
twice.
Live music as well at one point.
Well, I'm trying to remember. If you remember music, that's
mm-hmm.
unusual with Merce, because Merce is always very
pre-recorded.
Atonal. Pre-recorded.
Well,
right. It could be maybe a small ensemble.
Uh-huh.
But then we did, the next show was the world premiere of Body Box.
Right.
Because Jamie Hampton and Ashley Rowland started Body Box right at the same time.
And their most recent piece with the I think that must have
Pearl
been Skinner
Dive.
Kirk I was thinking of, when Kirk did the piece about the beach.
I think that
had live music.
Yeah, I mean, Eric and Daniel have been using a lot of
yeah.
live music lately. We actually presented Body Box and commissioned Body Box three times. We presented and commissioned Skinner, Kirk, and Bielemeyer
mm-hmm.
once at the Portland Opera Space.
Yeah.
And we've done a lot with Portland artists who really, it's quite amazing
mm-hmm.
What happens in the city.
Well,
it is.
Yeah.
There's such a wealth of talent and inspiration
yes.
and courage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know? Well, and then you're the wind beneath the wings, right? I mean, you make it
possible. Well, Pika, you know, they present dance.
Yes, yes,
and
they do great
very
work.
Very interesting things that they're doing. And
now at Artist Rep, we've got Risk Reward.
Yes.
A lot of good, neat, new work.
We were there Saturday night.
Oh, great.
It was terrific.
Oh, I'm so glad.
It was really, really a special one. And Wally was part of the curating team.
I've been on the panel for several years. I couldn't do it this year, but we were very impressed with what Jerry does.
Mm-hmm.
And his it seems to be a developing relationship with Artist Rep,
yes,
too. So
I
he's actually
so.
Curating a series next
mm-hmm.
to you.
We brought a piece this past season of Crystal Pites.
Mm-hmm.
Her company's called Kid Pivot from Vancouver, BC. And
mm-hmm.
she partnered with Electric Company Theater
mm-hmm.
in Vancouver with Jonathan
Young,
who's the artistic director there. And it was a piece called Petrophenheit.
Mm-hmm.
And we really made an effort to make sure the theater community was aware of it. And her work's very theatrical anyway, but that she partnered with a with a theater company was special, and we knew even more theatrical. So, but it was a piece that was so dynamic and so personal, because it was indicated in the program that this was based on a personal tragedy. But we learned more that it was Jonathan, who's the center focal character in the work. It was his daughter and niece and nephew who perished in a fire, and he was the first person at the scene. And so it's the 6 years since of what happened to him, what he went through, and you know, you hear about drugs, it just was so overwhelming for the audience to take all this in and not really have context or reference for it. But people, there was an intermission, but it was one of the bravest pieces of art I've ever seen. And I told him that I think he was one of the most bravest people to share it this way. He and his wife separated, you know, which often happens with these tragedies, yes. Mm-hmm. And but it premiered in Toronto, and she went to see it on the opening night and stayed through the whole thing, but couldn't talk about it right away. But eventually they did discuss the work together. So it's just, you know, it's just so personal that no one can know how to deal with that. And he's just put himself out in the world to deal with it, and we're all dealing with it with him.
Mm-hmm. This is an interesting
dealing with it with him, you know. Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting example Paul is citing, because we are discovering that the contemporary dance world is now, in some ways, moving into, you know, blending with other performing arts forms, and dance theater is very much a common fusion. And bring more and more of that. Also, live music, of course, and circus. And we're now getting into new circus, circus forms, and the blending of circus and dance. And this is an important goal of ours after, as we're going into the 19th season, is building our audience for what we're doing.
Right. I was just thinking about that, and I was thinking about the show in particular, Spring Awakening, the musical that was highly choreographed and lauded.
Well, Bill T. Jones actually did the original choreography.
And, you know, when I see how people now, well, I know in my heart that the physical, the body is so communicative. And as an actor, you're not necessarily trained to use it to its fullest. Now, when I see shows that are incorporating movement or, you know, various body techniques, different ways to create imagery with the body, in addition to textual, you know, use of text, it blows the sides off of theater. It just blows it out. Because there's so much to be gleaned from just the body, and words are kind of overrated with a lot of subjects, because they start to try to compartmentalize, you know, oh, I feel this, and I'm using my words, whereas there seems like an opening happens with the physical, with the body, with dance and movement, you know. There's such great work happening now, you know. And I love it. In fact, I think that another show that's using this a lot is Bright Star on Broadway right now. I've heard, you know, different talk about how directors are employing methods of physicalizing, you know, story and plot.
Well, it's so expressive. You know, you really can.
And it's
interpretive too. People can take it in a different way.
It's got an opening to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems words sometimes tend to. I don't know how to put it into words.
it becomes a different art form, really, and a different way to share and be creative. And you know, your training includes movement, right?
Mm-hmm. It does, and then more and more, interestingly enough, I mean, way back when I did the show Bad Boy, for instance, at Pearl Center Stage, and Eric choreographed it.
Yes.
And so here I meet a man who comes from the dance tradition. And while that's not my first mode of communication, I start to learn to collaborate with people and just share in the good of what they know how to do and just keep building my arsenal or paint box, you know.
Yeah.
The arsenal word I'm not crazy about.
Well, it's true. I think the artist today really... in a way need to be trained in all forms, in all disciplines. And a few years ago, I'm just recollecting, we did a show inspired, and this is a really interesting collaboration, is a dance theater piece called Rocco, from two Dutch choreographers, and it was inspired by the film Rocco and His Brothers. And we actually collaborated with the Northwest Film Center, who did show the film Northwest, Rocco and His Brothers.
Yes, it was, I mean, from 1960. Oh,
60. And
Antonio.
We decided, because it takes place in a boxing ring, we created a boxing ring on stage at the Newmark Theater and had the audience in the round on three sides and the audience in front.
And then they open up.
And it was one of the best things we did.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah, it was fun.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah. This is the kind of thing we're doing. And what's happening this coming season is we're working with a Portland choreographer, Tani Holt.
Mm-hmm.
And Tani has been creating work now for 18 years, I guess. She really pushes buttons, and she's not predictable in any sense. This is a piece called Sensation Disorientation, with five women, and decided to do it at Reed College, and we were looking at different spaces, and we were doing it in the new Performing Arts Building in their Diver Studio Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And
in the lounge.
And she is working with Kate Bredesen, who's as dramaturg.
Oh, wonderful. At
Reed, she teaches.
At Reed. So there already is a collaboration, even though it's a movement piece, she's working with a theater person at Reed. And we're going to be doing
that
in the round,
mm-hmm.
For seven shows. In
Reading. And when will that be taking place?
That's happening next January. It's January 18th through the 22nd.
Mm, I see.
Yes.
Well, you have an incredible upcoming season, so I think we have to kind of give everybody a little bit of a step into that. And because you start in early October with Diavolo.
Right.
And then you've got Camille A. Brown and Dancers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is all in the dance series. You've got Ballet Boys in January.
Yeah.
CCN Ballet de Lorraine in February 22.
Mm-hmm.
Ronald K. Brown and Evidence, April 6 through 8. And then Martha Graham Dance Company, May 10th.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Uncaged series with Inbal Pinto and Avshalom Pollock.
Israeli company, and they've always performed in the main series. We have not had them in for 10 years. The point is that it's an Israeli company that we haven't had in 10 years, and we're actually putting them into Lincoln Hall because it's a more intimate piece.
Mm-hmm. And then we've got the Uncaged series, and then there's some exclusive events, Cuisine and Confessions.
It's a movement-based circus company where it's acrobatics on stage and cooking. They make banana bread and pasta and serve it to the audience at the end of the show.
Well, I guess on that note, we can say, please go to the White Bird website, which is whitebird.org.
Whitebird.org.
And get your season tickets and support White Bird, because they've been supporting you for 20 years this year. And thank you so much for taking the
Susanna.
Time to talk
Thank
to
you.
Me.
We really enjoyed this time with you.
Oh, amazing.
And we admire you. You're one of the best performers in all Portland region.
Yes.
Thank you.
It always makes me happy to see.
Thank you. Well, I'm gonna have to look up all these companies and just start writing my cards and letters and saying, I don't know, if you want to work on a piece with somebody, I live in Portland, I'm available.
Believe me, that's not, you know, we'd like to do something like that.
Woohoo, okay.
We have been talking with the Weavers for a while and seeing how we can collaborate with Portland Playhouse.
Exciting stuff.
And we'd love to do, because we admire a lot of the theater companies, and we've been really supportive of Portland Playhouse.
I know, because I've seen you at many, many an event.
Yes.
Right.
Well,
have a lovely
so
day.
Much to do. Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. Day.
Adventures in Artslandia.